Welcome back, Three Amigos Holiday Version. Kirk Ludeke here on the Scouting Post with my main men, Dominic Tiano, Reed Duthie. It's Christmas time in Hollis. We are live. We are in charge. And we had to get the boys back together because it is holiday break for those teams around the junior leagues. In many cases, not much going on. And so those of us who are working, it can take a little time. For more leisurely pursuits. Yeah, right, leisure. Sure, wouldn't you say there, Reed?
Yeah, I was last night calling a junior B game just because the Bulldogs were on break, so picked up some time with the Hamilton Kilty Bees. So it's from one team to another for me. I don't know about leisure just yet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's a long time off. I think the next OHL game is December 28th, Reed.
Yeah, so 27th for Omaha. Going to be taking on the Des Moines Buccaneers. I hear you, boy. We got the boys together, and hey, lot to talk about. We're coming off of an exulting in the afterglow, or basking in the afterglow of the Boston Bruins 4-0 shutout victory at the Bell Center, Montreal. Yaroslav Halak whitewashing his former team. We got Colby Cave's first NHL goal. You know, Brad Marchand is doing his thing, or I guess it's Marchand now. I always called him Marchand, guys, and then it was hard for me to call him Marchand, and now I got to go back to the way it was. Went to school with Tracy Marchand back in the day. Good times right now in terms of when you look at what the Bruins are missing. In terms of key veterans off the roster, missed games, you know, Charlie McAvoy's back, but Big Z, Patrice Bergeron haven't been in the lineup a while. Reed, let's talk about that win last night and just how important really every victory and every 2 points that the Bruins can bank while their big guns are out and their veteran leaders are on the shelf, how important that is in the standings as the Bruins leapfrogged Montreal to take that top wild card spot and stay within striking distance of one of the top three spots in the division.
Well, it's big on multiple fronts. And don't think there wasn't a little bit extra in for Yaroslav Halak and coming in and getting a shutout against his former team. But in addition to that, you talk about the standings, trying to create a little bit of separation from the teams that are out of the playoff picture to being in the playoff picture, and then trying to close that gap a little bit again to those top three teams. And the Bruins have found themselves, despite all the injuries, in a really nice spot that way where they can go up, they could secure a wild card spot as time goes along. And this team is only going to get better because, as you mentioned, the players that were missing. But what's really stood out to me is the guys on the back end that have stepped up. Charlie McAvoy, I thought, looked great last night. Torrey Krug, again, looks like he's on pace for, I think, the fourth season in a row to reset his own personal best in points. The kid just, he's a machine. It's one of the most talented puck-moving defensemen that this organization has seen in a long, long time. And then the guys that don't get any credit whatsoever, because I'm sure we'll talk about the big guns, but Sean Corrali, Chris Wagner, and Noel Achari have absolutely suffocated the last couple of opponents now for the Bruins. There's no way to play against this line because when they're motivated, they're hitting everything that moves, they're keeping the puck 200 feet from their own net, and they're throwing it on goal. It may not be the highest quality of shots, but they're getting the puck to the net, they're crashing, and they're just generally making life miserable for the opposition defense, and they did that last night against Montreal, and I thought that played a big part in the Habs kind of looking disengaged as the game went along.
Yeah, you know, there's a Montreal, hockey guy that I follow on Twitter, and he had an interesting comment. He said, you know, last night wasn't necessarily about Montreal being bad as it was much about the other guys being that good, which is a nice compliment. Usually fans of the team that come out on the losing end like to talk about how, team didn't show up and they don't, you know, they're short to give credit where due, but you know, as you said, that fourth line being very difficult to play against. You know, they're not producing the offense that you want to see from your fourth line. But if you don't get the offense, then you better darn well get the checking and the defensive play. And I don't think anyone can question the physicality or the effectiveness that unit has had. Dom, let's get you in here. just thoughts in general of the first, we're over the third mark. And what do you think? What are you seeing?
Well, you know, the position that they're in, they definitely got to beat the teams below them, and they've got to do better than 500 against the teams above them. I thought they absolutely deserved to win against Buffalo. I thought, for the most part, they outplayed them. They beat Chicago. They have shown they can beat the Leafs. They've beaten them twice now. I'm not always a doom and gloom guys. You guys know that. I'm patient. The injuries have been devastating to this team. And the one thing that stands out to me the most about the Bruins this season is this. We've known them to always be one of the top penalty-killing teams in the league. Now, they're sitting somewhere around 25th, 26th. I didn't look at the stats today to see where they actually sit, but they're somewhere around there. So you're missing a Zdeno Chara, you're missing a Kevin Miller, and you're missing a Patrice Bergeron. Three of your better penalty killers. Now, injuries happen in this game. We know that. But if those three hadn't been injured and hadn't missed any time, how much improvement would there be in the PK? How many goals against allowed on the PK would have been prevented? And how many one-goal games would that have affected that they could have drawn points out of? And to me, it's an interesting stat to try and break down and try and look at it, because if that was sitting anywhere from first to 10th that we're used to seeing, they wouldn't be in the position that they are now. So anybody who wants to say the Bruins need this and the Bruins need that, and, you know, to me, that PK is played a huge factor in where they're sitting right now.
Yeah, no question. And again, like, in a perfect world, you'd have your complete roster. You wouldn't have key elements of your team out for as long as they've had. But, at the end, no one cares. But, I can't get past in how some circles, and it's that, again, we've talked about the fast food, I want it now mentality, and how, success of Boston sports mean that expectations are higher. Whether you want to read that as entitled, spoiled, I don't care, call it what you will. But there is a higher bar set in Boston, and that's fair. But at the same time, it seems like, any loss is an indictment on the team, not finding success without context. And I just think that when you look at some of the games they've managed to hang in and win, it's been instrumental, because the flip side to that is if they hadn't gotten the victories and the points that they have during this long stretch of games where they haven't had, several of their key core players who, even though are aging, one guy's 41 and another guy's on the wrong side of 30, they're still a very integral part of the team. Now we have Jake DeBrusk out. He missed his sixth game last night. The flip side is they could have cratered and lost these games and fallen out of playoff contention. So sometimes I don't know what people expect or what they want, why people just can't, take a step back, take a breath, and say, hey, you know what, in the grand scheme of things, there's a pretty scrappy team that's managed to find ways to get it done. It may not be pretty, and it may not be ideal the way we want it, but ultimately this is not a bad team. Think of what they're going to accomplish when the big guns get back into the lineup.
Exactly. We'd be discussing who are we going to move. We should be sellers now. You can break down each individual player that's been brought up. To me, I'm really intrigued by Jacob Forsbach and Carlson, because it's that fast food mentality you mentioned, Kirk. Everybody wants to see it now. But from game one to game whatever it was he played last night, we're seeing a player that is playing with more confidence, is beginning to feel more comfortable, is beginning to do things that normally he wouldn't do in a situation where he's playing his first, second, third game in the NHL. And, at first people were saying he wasn't trying, he's got no energy. You know, maybe to call him cerebral isn't the right thing, but, you know, it's his first NHL experience, and a guy doesn't come in with confidence right off the bat. He's got to learn. He's got to feel comfortable. I'm really surprised at how well he's playing his last few games.
Thoughts on JFK, Reed?
I'm not overly surprised, actually, Dom, because this is a kid that I thought for a long time was going to be a very good player, but I think maybe surprised in how quickly he's turned it around from what we saw when he first came back up. And you're right, it is that fast food mentality. People wanted him to come up and be a complete impact player. And you could tell by the way Bruce Cassidy was talking that was not the situation they were in. This was essentially a Band-Aid that they had to put on a gaping wound at the time when they brought JFK back up. And now, as you said, you're seeing him find his game, and now he's becoming the player that I thought they drafted. He's becoming that 200-foot center that can kind of play in every style, play in every opportunity, play in all facets of the hockey game. Very smart player, very slick player. I think now people are starting to get the look at how good he can be and how good he's eventually going to be. It's just he's in a whole logjam of players who are really kind of coming into their own all at the same time.
Yeah, but what is it, you know, what does it do? What does it do for the team? And what does it do for the general manager? What does it do for the coaches when you can get these young guys in? Because let's face it, you know, if Bergeron doesn't go down, if McAvoy's not down for an extended period of time, and then Chara goes down, and Kevin Miller goes down, and John Moore goes down for a couple of games or whatever it was, and then all of a sudden, you know, that opens the door for the Jeremy Lauzons and Jakub Zboril to get his first NHL action. Like what does this stuff do, and where does Don Sweeney, Bruce Cassidy, and the Bruins go from here now that these players are getting NHL looks and they're realizing, you know what? These guys are actually pretty effective. They, you know, they're not ready for prime time in all situations, but these are guys we could potentially win with in the not too distant future. What does that do to the team?
It's going to create a real logjam. It's going to create because we've talked about it before in these podcasts that eventually some of these kids are going to have to move because there's just too many of them if they all develop to be able to put into the lineup all at one time. You're never going to have that luxury to be able to do it. But it kind of gives you a look at, well, these guys are the ones that are stepping in first, and teams now get a look at what they might be able to trade for with the Bruins. All of a sudden, the Bruins prospects become even more attractive than they already were, and you can kind of take a long list as the general manager to be able to go through and say, well, we see where he can fit in the lineup long term, and maybe we don't have another player of that style in the system right now, so we have to keep him. And you can start to maybe look at where you have duplication of skill packages and where you have those skill packages that you only have one of in the system. Like I would say that a Torrey Krug is the kind of player that you only have one of in your system that you really can't afford to move.
But wait, what about Matty Grizzly? No, I mean, hey, look, we know they're not the same player other than the fact that they have similar size, but please continue, Reed.
No, I love Grizzly too, but that's a different story that we can get onto. But you look at that and start seeing where there's that duplication, where you might have that depth of prospects to be able to draw on if you need, say, another scoring winger up front with a little bit more experience, and you get that idea of where the players are that are very unique to your system that you really don't want to move, that you really can't afford to move along because they're harder to replace from what you have now.
Yeah, it's. I'm going to throw a word out there that Bruins fans have hated for, well, going back to the Peter Chiarelli days. It's evaluating. They have a chance. Look, an NHL scout, I was at a game last week, said to me, he says, look, the Bruins have the prospect pool. They have the players down there that can play. It's a good prospect pool, and they have assets. So something's going to have to give. So as much as we hate the word, it is an evaluation process when it comes to the JFKs, the Jeremy Luzons, the Jacobs Burles, and those type of players. So what these rash of injuries have done have sort of sped up the process for Don Sweeney and company to be able to get a read on these players. And as Reed said, figure out which are the keepers, which are the guys to move. And, you know, it's funny because you guys mentioned Torrey Krug and Matty Grzelcyk, and I've had this debate for the last couple of weeks with Bruins fans, is who is your better trade asset? And I can make the argument, because I've had this discussion with people around the game, that some teams would find Matty Grzelcyk more attractive than Torrey Krug, simply because when you're dealing with Torrey Krug, you're trying to deal with Torrey Krug, for example, you're narrowed to, you know, the top few contenders in the league who may have the cap space this year, but then not have it for next year, being that he's under contract. And whereas if you're talking to Matty Grzelcyk, all 30 other teams could take him on. He's cost control for another year, and they have him for under control for 4 years beyond that as a restricted free agent. And you know, when you're dealing potentially with 30 teams as opposed to four or five, you may get a better deal there.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I mean, I was, you know, it's tongue in cheek. Obviously, it's a play on the idea that some fans look at Grzelcyk and Krug and see the same guy simply because of the way their stature is, whereas they're two, to me, very, very different players, and I've always maintained that.
Exactly.
But you're 100% right on the economics of it. You're looking at a young player who, you know, doesn't have a modified no-trade clause. You know, he can be dealt to anyone, whereas the veteran does. And the bigger piece is, not only is Torrey Krug under contract this year and next year, but the following year, he's going to command big coin. So any team that's going to trade for Torrey Krug either feels like they've got to, you know, have a better than reasonable chance of signing him and is willing to commit the big time money that he is going to get paid. You talk about cash money, homie, from Randy Moss back in the day, that's going to be Torrey Krug, you know, next year. That pool is significantly smaller. And, you know, I'll be honest with you. I don't like the trade Krug talk at all. There's no secret that, you know, we're all Krug guys. We have been. But I also understand that the Bruins have some tough decisions. Now, speaking of decisions, and this isn't a tough decision, but it's all kind of, it goes with the territory in terms of driving other dominoes on the roster in terms of how we're going to do. But let's talk about Captain Caveman, Colby Cave, because, you know, Colby Cave came. He's one of four undrafted free agents on the roster. Put that on Twitter last night. And he's up. He's playing. They're getting some mileage out of the former Swift Current Bronco captain there. And what does Colby Cave potentially do to the dynamic in terms of, you know, you've got JFK, you know, in play. You've got some other prospects maybe down on the farm that might be vying for spots on the team. Is he a guy that maybe they keep long term, or is he one of these maybe prime assets that they can turn around like they did with Frank Vetrano and leverage him in a deal elsewhere?
Go ahead, Reed.
I was just going to say, I could honestly see that turning either direction with Colby Cave. He's earned himself a spot. And I saw the tweets a little while ago, the update that because of the games played now, he would have to go through waivers to go back to the American Hockey League. And I don't think Colby Cave needs to worry about that. I think
not,
he's earned
gonna
his
happen.
Spot.
Yep, nope.
Yeah,
they're losing him.
Yeah, no, nobody's thinking about putting him on the waiver wire. I can guarantee you that. And he is a really nice player to have on your roster because, again, he's another one of these guys, and the Bruins have become masters of this, finding players that can play competently in multiple roles. And that's exactly what Colby Cave has brought to the team. But it does create, again, that logjam effect where, okay, we want to keep him, But as Bergeron gets healthy and gets back into the lineup, that pushes the center depth down. You can maybe send JFK back down and at least avoid this for the moment, although JFK's been playing well. But you've got to find a spot to wedge Colby Cave in there, because he's just flat out earned it. I don't see how you take him out of the lineup when he's been a real help in driving what success the Bruins have been able to have through the injuries.
Yeah, hey, look, either way, having that strength down the middle is just critical. And so whether you're talking, you know, Bergeron, Krejci, Krejci, Bergeron is your 1-2 punch, and then, you know, having a guy like Colby Cave, who, you know, he is to me, he looks like a seasoned veteran out there, just in terms of the way he plays, his habits. His goal last night was classic case of good habits, where he goes in, but he goes right to the middle of the ice, possessions out on the perimeter. You watch him, you know, shift, open up space for himself, where he's essentially alone with the time and space, and when they are able to get him the puck, he buries it, right? That is a smart hockey player's goal. Because the tendency for younger players without experience is to drift. You know, they might try to go and vacate that spot in front of the net to try to support the play along the wall. And in so doing, it's well-intentioned, but now they've completely taken themselves out of the play. It was a veteran-type play to get your first NHL goal. It wasn't one of those fluky things where it just kind of happened or, you know, garbage. That was a prime-time goal, and he's not going to score a lot. But, you know, a lot of people had time for Riley Nash last year, as we all did. And they look alike, kind of twins separated at birth kind of thing, or long lost brothers. But the play resembles him on the ice as well.
I want to throw this in because we talk a lot about the lower level guys, and, you know, they're not superstars. Okay. But we see the value in guys in the roles they play on the third or fourth line or whatever. And so we see what we see in Cade, but we're not trying to make him out to be a superstar, because I'll use Jamal Smith as an example. I loved the pickup. I really did. Unfortunately, the guy was thrown into back-to-back games with no practice, and fans never really got to see what this guy can bring to the team. For Cave, I mean, I like that third line as it's constituted now with JFK in the middle. I really love the chemistry between them, what they're starting to show. So Patrice comes back. As you said, we got Krejci and Berge down the middle. I like JFK on the third line. Is Cave a fourth line player? And then what do you do with that fourth line who, like Reed mentioned earlier, has been playing extremely well? You know, they signed Sean Corrali to a 3-year deal. That's looking kind of iffy right now, at least in my opinion, to lock someone up for 3 years. Yeah, you've got to find a spot on the roster for Cave right now, but where do you put him?
No.
That's a tough call. Like Reed said, you know, they could send JFK down for now and buy them some time, but.
And I think that's what they do. And ultimately, like, you know, again, the point of me originally bringing up Cave was, you know, is he a guy that's playing his way into being an asset where, you know, the Bruins, you know, again, none of these trade decisions are easy. Believe me, guys, I know. I know. And you make the decision, and it's always the worst part of the business to have to say goodbye to guys that have come in and contributed and been a part of the room and a part of your culture. And, you know, sometimes the farewell is easier than others. Some of them are really difficult. But Cave looks like that consummate Bruin-type player in terms of his style and his substance, the kind of team guy he is, the kind of reputation he had coming out of Major Junior, the WHL, where he was, you know, Jake DeBrusk's liney there in Swift Current and Swifty. But, you know, is maybe Cave, you know, I agree. I think that the obvious answer, and it might not be so obvious, and so if I'm wrong, I reserve the right to revise my opinion on this. But I'm with Reed. I think when Mr. Bruin, 37, Or I guess Mr. Everything, because Mr. Bruin would be 15, Milt Schmidt. Rest in peace, Mr. Schmidt. But Mr. Everything, when he comes back, I think it's, you know, I think JFK has to go down simply because it's an option, right? He's waiver exempt. He goes down, no big deal. If you put Colby Cave on the waiver wire, right, someone's going to claim him. All right. Anybody that's watching, he's gone. So, again, you have to play the averages, and then you keep him in the lineup. You see how he does, and you know what? If there's a drop-off, maybe it's a timing thing, and Don Sweeney can then leverage that moment to maybe use him as leverage or as a sweetener or some part of a deal to do something to get some assets back. But I think it's a good problem to have. I said on a certain forum the other day, that when you're dealing from a position of strength as a GM, that's where you want to be. You don't want to be that team that's cratering, or that team that was expected to do well and is below the cut line, and the pressure's on for you to make the playoffs, and now you're over a barrel and you're trying to make deals, and everyone knows you're stuck. I think where the Bruins are, from a team standpoint and from a fan standpoint, this is exactly where you want to be. And I know some folks are chomping at the bit and excited and want something to happen, but don't rush it. Just kind of take its time, because the Bruins, even undermanned, are proving themselves to be a pretty tough out these days.
Exactly. And my question to Bruins fans right now would be, would you rather be the Boston Bruins, or would you rather be the St. Louis Blues, the LA Kings, or the Chicago Blackhawks?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a faction of people that no matter what, Dom, are going to go, well, those teams have a better shot at Jack Hughes, and you just want to run your head through a wall.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that. But
hey, look, no, your point is well taken. It's well made.
Who expected the St. Louis Blues to be where they are? Who expected the LA Kings to be where they are? Yeah.
It's like that. It's like that individual that was, chirping at me on Twitter yesterday. He was saying, "Now the Blues are rolling on the floor, laughing about the Bruins taking, paying Backus what they're." Hey, buddy, I got news for you. I hope you're listening. I think his name's Pete. Whatever you are, whoever you are, Pete. Hey, Pete, check it out. I know guys on the Blues. Okay, nobody's laughing over there. Nobody's laughing. Okay, when you're not in the playoffs, it's not a fun time. And believe me, they do not care that the Bruins signed David Backus. They're worried about their situation. What I would offer to you is, instead of being, smart guy with all the answers from the couch, why don't you consider, that mistakes happen. Guys get signed to overinflated contracts. It's part of the deal. If we're going to harp on Backus and how much he's being paid, fair point. He's not living up to the high end expectations of that contract. But I'll be completely honest with you. I can admit that I was wrong. I thought it was going to be a good signing. I thought that the drop off would happen later on, maybe next year. And it is what it is. But I'm okay with them gambling a little bit on that player, because even if he's not producing, that guy's helping you. He's a part of the solution with the culture in the room. He's making the young guys better. He's setting his own lack of statistical success aside to be a good teammate and a professional, right? Because that's who David Backus is, and that was what the Bruins were willing to accept risk on. And so this is the stuff that the people that get fixated on statistics and production, all that, don't understand. When you're trying to build a winning team, you need glue guys. You need people that are going to embrace your values and enhance your culture. And so it is a fair point to say the Bruins are not getting good bang for the buck to get that kind of contribution, but they're getting something. And you know what? His play has picked up of late. And so if David Backus can just be the veteran and leader they need him to be and chip in here and there, I'm okay with it. But believe me, Pete, the St. Louis Blues are not sitting around laughing. I'd love to know who your sources are on that too. You're get off the couch, buddy. And why don't you just, you know, focus on real world stuff here. Not everything is about the mistakes and the Bruins being unsuccessful and making perhaps a wrong call there. But anyway, I'm off the soapbox, guys. Take it away.
Well, if anybody is on the floor in St. Louis, it's because they're hiding under their desk, hoping no one notices they're there right now. That has been a garage fire that has gotten out of control. But they've got the talent in the organization to be able to bring that back around. And I don't think this is going to be a long-term downswing for the Blues. I think the talent that's there, and they're going to make some moves. They are definitely going to make some moves. But I think once that's all said and done and they can get everything kind of back to where they want it, they're going to be on the upswing. Second of that, in terms of David Backes, guys, I'll take you to a conversation I had with my dad. Anybody that has listened to our podcast knows my dad is a huge Bruins fan going back to the 1960s. And he was asking me what I thought about David Backes. And I said, Dad, you remember Marty Lapointe? And he said, yeah, he was overpaid. And I said, yeah, but who did he mentor? He said, oh, Patrice Bergeron. Exactly. So at the time, it looked like, well, maybe that was a bad contract for Marty Lapointe in terms of the AAV on it. But who did he bring along? The guy who's probably next or second in line to have his number retired in Boston. So you're looking at a player in David Backes who, if he can mentor JFK, Danton Heinen, Anders Bjork, Ryan Donato, go on and on down the list, Trent Frederick, then all of a sudden that money, that player can be remembered in reverence like Lapointe is, rather than certain people being disappointed in a $6 million contract.
Yeah. I mean, the irony at all of this is that, you know, 10 years ago, you know, before the salary cap, or I guess we're more like 15 years ago, you know, David Backes signing would have been lauded, you know, but and I get it. The reality is cap crunches happen. You can't have money tied up in non-productive players, but it's always a bit of a pet peeve of mine, because as you guys know, I'm a military guy, right? So team building and having the right culture is very important to me, and I recognize the importance not just on the military experience I had, but also on the team side. So, you know, whenever and granted, you got to have talented, skilled teams, you know, to win in hockey, no question. But there's a balance. You have to have leadership. You have to have character. And I always feel like it's the people who have spent the least amount of time around the game and being a part of a team who make the most noise about how that's overvalued. And just once, I'd like folks to at least accept and acknowledge, hey, you know what, maybe I didn't play at the highest level, or maybe I haven't been around teams that are at a high level to where I truly can appreciate the importance of having a winning culture, having the right players, because jobs are on the line. And so, you know, again, hey, Pete, you know, apologies. I shouldn't be calling people out on the podcast. He's entitled to his opinion. But the thing, I guess, that gets me is the absolute seems to be reveling in the in pointing out that the Bruins made a mistake. And I guess I don't understand fan mentality where, you know, you want to be right and you want to point out that the Bruins, you know, made a mistake on a player. And so you seem to enjoy the point you're making that maybe they're not getting bang for the buck, when the reality is, with all due respect to some of these fans out there, they're not around the team. They don't understand. If they talk to Bruins players, I suspect that to a man, those Bruins players would have a lot of time for David Backes and are glad he's around. And anyone that went through what he did, I'm sorry, last year, in terms of, and even this year with the injuries he suffered, just to play the game, if you can't respect that, get out of here, you know? Get out of here. I get it.
Yep.
I get it. You know, they're paying him a lot of money. But this guy has gone literally through as close to a war as you can to play a professional sport for the privilege to put on that spoke to be. And he's done so with class and grace. And I just think that deserves more respect than some of the fans have out there. And, you know, if you don't agree with me, fine, so be it. We'll agree to disagree. But you're not going to sway me any. And again, get off your couch. If you want to talk about what other teams are doing, I seriously doubt you have that kind of insight. Maybe save the sarcasm and, you know, aim it somewhere where maybe it's a little better received than a guy that had, you know, whatever, a centimeter or whatever was removed from his colon and then was on the ice, you know, however, 2, 3, 4 weeks ahead of schedule just to get out there. If you can't respect that, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, and we said it last year. You when guys like Jake DeBrusk and Anders Bjork and
Ryan Donato. I mean,
Ryan Donato. It goes down and down the line. They see that, and you know it makes them want to be the same type of hockey player.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, I think I beat that dead horse. Sorry. Let's let you guys do a little more talking so I can, like, I'm, you know, I just get passionate about this, you know, and again,
I think we all do.
I get passionate. Absolutely. And, you know, it's not personal. But at the same time, when you see guys that sacrifice and work as hard, even if the production isn't there, to reward them, I just feel like sometimes, you know, social media and the information age has created such toxic levels of discourse where people can't just say, yeah, I think Backes was a bad signing and it's, you know, not good for the team that he's on the books. And I can respect that opinion. I disagree with it. Cause again, I pointed out why I think he's contributing. It may not live up to the high standards of the cap hit, but it's something. Versus an Alexei Zamenhof, for example. How did that work out? What kind of contribution and success? And again, I'm not saying, you know, two wrongs make a right. What I am saying is we can do it without the sarcastic smarmy, you know, like I said, we can't have a discussion about Matt Barzal without someone, you know, just being so critical of the Boston Bruins and missing a Matt Barzal or a Kyle Connor. Now it's Thomas Chabot, Hot Sam Bacho, with a nod to Mr. Milks there in Ottawa. You know,
Let's not forget, last year, Kirk, it was Travis Konechny as well.
Right?
You know,
why can't, and guys, this question is for you. Why is it that, you know, when you look at the drafting, you know, there always seems to be this natural tendency to focus on the misses or the guys that are not here versus discussing at length the success that brought players, I don't know, like David Pastrnak maybe, or Patrice Bergeron, who went all the way down to pick 45 in 2003, or Charlie McAvoy, who I think if everyone could do a do-over of the 2016 draft, is there any question that after Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine, he's probably the guy that would come off the board if GMs had a crystal ball, given the value of defensemen in this day and age? I mean, why is it that we have to focus on an undersized, albeit very skilled, productive playmaking center who, in all likelihood, would he be having the kind of impact in Boston with Krejci and Bergeron here, being in the contracts they are and the status that they have, that he is enjoying in New York? I don't know. Guys, let's have that discussion.
Well, first of all, I like Alexei Zamenhof. But beyond that, Matt Barzal would not be having the type of success in Boston that he's having with the New York Islanders. And I said this, and guys, I think it was when we actually previewed that draft. I think we were all talking about they're likely not going to take a center because Bergeron and Krejci are both there. If they're going to take a center, it's going to be more of a project for off in the future. Yep. Enter Jakob Forsbacka Carlson. So I think they did a good job in terms of what they got in total out of that draft. We're seeing Jeremy Lauzon turn into a really good defenseman. We always forget Brandon Carlo was a second-round pick in that draft. If you had that do-over now with the way that the picks laid out, the Bruins probably never even get to touch Brandon Carlo.
Right.
So there's another great success on that list. And you look at the guys they took in the first round, they got panned for taking Jake DeBrusk. Now everybody has all of a sudden switched opinion.
Yeah, revisionist history, though. Like, yep. You know, don't say that on the internet because people are going to say, oh, I don't remember that. I remember people liking DeBrusk, but it was, you know, it was Sinishin. We didn't like Sinishin and Zboril and all that when, you know, but anyway.
And I can remember watching that draft on television and the first pick of the three being Jakub Zboril, and all the analysts, and I don't want to slag anybody, but all the analysts and everybody agreeing, this is a great pick. This is a really great pick for the Bruins. He's going to play in the NHL. He's going to be a solid defenseman in their top three.
I was one of them. I absolutely projected him to the Bruins there. I never mentioned Thomas Chabot once.
Nope. So. I was the same way. I said I was already making the pick as they were walking up. I said, Zboril's going to be the first one, and I have no idea where they go from there. And then they take DeBrusk and Sinishin. And part of what happened, and part of the reason why this has stuck with so many people is because of how badly – and I go back and I think, really, at the draft with 18-year-olds, the analysts should not be panning those picks the way they panned those two picks. To me, it didn't matter who Don Sweeney took there. For some reason, there was an agenda at that time that they didn't believe Don Sweeney knew what he was doing. And they were going to pan anything that the Bruins did if it was even slightly off the list. And that's exactly what happened. And Jake DeBrusk has kind of stuck it in some people's craws, I think. And Zach Sinishin has started to do the same. And, of course, we just saw Jakub Zboril make his NHL debut. They had a really good draft, guys. They might have taken six NHL players in their first six picks. I don't know how you can ask for more than that.
Yeah, and you got to remember, it was the same people. It's not just Don Sweeney. It's the same people in the Bruins Brain Trust that picked Jakub Zboril and picked Zach Sinishin, and that picked Jake DeBrusk and Brandon Carlo and Jacob Versbacka Carlson. It's not like it was, hey, their brains were taken over. There's a lot of talk out there that the Bruins wanted to move those picks and move up to select Noah Hanifin, and that they were caught off guard when the deal fell through, and they just picked who they picked. No, it doesn't happen that way, people. They have a list. They're prepared for any and all situations. It's like they're not going to go on the draft floor and go, okay, trade didn't happen. What are we going to do now? They were prepared for any such scenario to come up.
What typically happens, Dom, what you will see is when you have guys that are right there close, you might have a discussion at the table based on who maybe is invested in a player versus another. You know, one last maybe advocacy for a certain player over another if they're similar or if the organization views them similarly in terms of value. But you're 100% right. Like, they're not sitting there, like, completely baffled in terms of who they want to take. The Bruins had to make three consecutive selections, right? So they stayed up at the podium, as I recall. They didn't go back down, or did they go back down? I don't remember. What happened? I was there.
No, they went back down.
Well, did they go back down? Okay, well.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, there were discussions. It wasn't like, you know, he went into vapor lock, and then another team, like you've seen in the past with the football draft, where if you don't get your pick in time, the other team runs up and makes a selection ahead of you and all that. There was none of that. So you're absolutely right. No. There is some final politicking maybe that goes on internally as a staff, you know, based on the guys that are at the table. But the guys that are at the table are the heavy hitters. Like, all the area guys, they're not there. Typically, if you are, but the whole staff isn't sitting at the table, there would be bedlam and chaos, you know, guys would, you know, so it's the, literally the brain trust, and typically the GM looks over and says, all right, guys, who are we taking, you know, what are we going to do, and, you know, the head scout has a big part.
Exactly, like, you can go through any draft and dissect any team's draft and say, you know, they should have done this or they should have done that. Who in 2015, well, I guess the rankings were out there, but who today would take Dylan Strome over Mitch Marner? I mean, I wouldn't have done it in 2015. I shook my head when Arizona passed on Mitch Marner to take Dylan Strome, but, you know, there was a consensus out there. But, you know, I go even to 2016. I remember a debate I had with the one and only Bob McKenzie on Twitter about Olli Juolevi and Jacob Chychrun and the kid in Tampa, Sergachev. And I said, like, no way, Bob. I says, Juolevi is not going to play as many NHL games as either Chychrun or Sergachev are, and the two of them will be in the NHL long. But Juolevi was the consensus. He had an excellent World Juniors, but How many NHL games does he have to his credit right now?
None.
Right.
And he'll probably get there at some point, but yeah, you're right.
Every team misses. We're talking about the 15th overall pick for the Bruins, and I'm just giving you cases of top five picks that teams have screwed up massively on. So it's not exclusive to the Bruins. It happens to everybody.
Oh, yeah, we know. And that's why I say, you know, like, the guys that for example, the individual on Twitter who likes to, when Thomas Chabot goes and scores, you know, goes top shelf on Pekka in OT, oh, he could have been a Bruin. Well, sure. But he wasn't the guy that was talked. Let's be honest. Let's not be disingenuous. You know, there wasn't a big clamoring for Thomas Chabot, you know, up in the top 15. He was seen as an upside defenseman that had a good skill set, but was he, you know, what was he going to be at the NHL level? Not so sure. You know, hey, very good player. He has since gone on. He's a heck of a talent. Hey, look, I love him. He's on my fantasy team. Gets me a lot of points. You know, I'll take it. But again, it goes back to, you know, anyone can go, like, are these people that are making such a big deal? And I'm talking about Bruins fans in general that just obsess and fixate. And they're, you know, General Honoré said during, Hurricane Katrina, you don't be stuck on stupid. You know, you're stuck on stupid, you know, when he said to the reporter. I don't know if you guys saw that. It's a great YouTube clip. Go back and watch it if you've never seen it. But some of these fans are just so, like, anytime you mention even the name of a player and it's like, oh, well, the Bruins could have had him, you know. Yeah, they could have, but they didn't. How about, you know, what are your thoughts on the players they actually drafted? Or better yet, are you then, when another team mentions David Pastrnak, are you going to go back and chirp them for taking Dal Colle? Because I found myself in a discussion like that where, you know, an Islander fan was mocking me for not having taken Barzal, and I said, well, you know, hey, good job with Dal Colle, by the way. All of a sudden it was like you crossed this, this forbidden stream, you know, oh my gosh, you know, how dare you? But, you know, I don't understand the time and the energy that we spend. I know it's, look, anyone can analyze it and tell you're never going to completely get away from the negativity. But the draft, by and large, when you look at the Bruins' success in the here and now, and the fact that they have, if the playoffs ended or the season ended tomorrow, they're in the playoffs. The guys that are doing it for them, for the most part, are the kids they've drafted, the guys they've drafted. You know, there's value in it. Goodness, are they high-end stars performing the way some others are? No. Not yet, but they're finding ways to get the job done. And more importantly, they're giving the GM the coin of the realm that is needed to make potential franchise-shaping deals down the road. And that's what everyone should want. If you have a system that is bereft of talent, then what you basically have is no future, no present, and no future, because none of what you have is going to be of interest to other teams.
And I'm going to throw another one at you. Let's assume that they drafted Matthew Barzal or Kyle Connor and Thomas Chabot. They drafted the three of them. And this is what we've talked about before, is drafting people or drafting players that don't necessarily fit into your plans in 1 or 2 years. You spread it out. So they drafted the three of them. The three of them make the NHL at the same time. And the three of them come up for contract at the same time. All of a sudden, you're looking anywhere between $20 and $30 million to sign those three players.
Yep.
What do you do?
Boom.
That's exactly.
Point.
So you've got to spread. I mean, Kirk, I know you don't deal with the salary cap in the USHL, but you have other factors you have to look at, like your birthday, first and foremost. So you have to spread things out. And it's the same thing, only the NHL is doing it in terms of a salary cap? Where do these guys fit in? How long away? You guys know I'm a huge fan of Dustin McFall. I wanted the Bruins so badly to draft him last season. And they got him in the, what was it, sixth round.
Sixth round, yeah.
Yeah. And my big thing with Bruins fans was, look, this guy is not going to be in the NHL next year or the year after. This guy is legitimately 5-6 years away, you know. But they've got guys. They've got the Lozons. They've got the Carlos. They've got the McAvoys.
Sherman. He's coming up on 5-6 years since he was drafted, right?
Right. So they've got these kids to fill in immediately. They're thinking that far down the future. And it was the same way with drafting. I think they probably expected Zboril to be up
now,
right?
No.
But the Sinishin pick, we all knew he was going to be a project. I mean, I wanted Zachary Sinishin. I can't sit here and say now I wanted him at the 15th, 16th, or 17th pick because I'd be lying. But he's a player I wanted them to have. But we all knew he was going to take a few years, you know, and he's starting to show at the AHL level now what he's capable of doing. The guy just needs a little bit more time, and it's that fast food mentality that, you know, you mentioned earlier, Kirk, and we keep harping on him. People don't want to wait, and that's the problem.
Yeah. No, 100%. And he's doing it at an age – like, he's a second-year pro at a younger age than Brian Smolinski was when he turned pro, when he signed out of Michigan State and joined the Bruins and had a – you know, was a 30-goal guy in his first full season of the NHL and solid the following year. And then, you know, the Bruins move him in the package for Kevin Stevens, which, oops, you know, in hindsight, not so good. But – you know, Sinishin's younger than Smolinski was before Smolinski even turned pro. And it's this, hey, all the other, these other guys that were drafted, you know, before and after have made it. They're making an impact in the NHL. The Bruins blew it. Well, no, not necessarily. The book is not closed. He's a second year pro after playing very sparingly. And oh, by the way, he's taking big steps forward. He's starting to show that. That offense, if you look back at his junior career, you can chart the same thing. 26 goals his first year as a fourth liner and third liner, had little, you know, but very little power play time, right? That first year. And then the second year, boom, bigger role, 45 goals, you know, back to back 45 goal years, if I'm not mistaken, something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a process, or process is my buddy Dom would say, from Stratford, Ontario. It's a process. Sometimes guys just come in and they're just awesome, and they're awesome right away, and everyone, you know, celebrates, and you know, you have the David Pasternak's of the world or the Charlie McAvoy's that are just absolute home runs where you go yard, you know, you just, you know, stroke it out of the park right away, and then other guys take time. But we are in this situation where you got to declare a winner now. You got to decide now who should we have taken? And I think we've probably played this one out, but I think we've made some good points here. And I say to people, if you spend as much time and energy on the guys, that the Bruins actually have versus the ones they don't, you know, we probably have some pretty good discussions. And some pretty good debates, but it just seems like some folks are just kind of stuck on stupid, and they want to harp on the negative and focus on the mistakes versus being at least fair-minded and balanced about it and saying, yeah, you know, we might have missed on a guy I wanted in 15, but man, David Pasternak's like one of the best players in the world, you know? And
yeah,
you know, he's
exactly,
you know, and he's 22 years old.
No? Well, guys, let me give you three quick points here from that same 2015 draft. So right before the Bruins, you had Florida and Dallas. None of them take Barzal, Connor, Shabbat, Lawson Crouse, and Dennis Gurianov. Don't hear anybody smashing Florida and Dallas's fan bases or front office for that one. The number 22 pick, Washington takes Ilya Samsonov right in front of Brock Besser and Travis Konechny. And then in the second round, at 34, the Toronto Maple Leafs take Travis Dermott right in front of the Carolina Hurricanes, taking Sebastian Aho. So yeah.
I'll tell you why, though. Because those guys were projected to go around there. It's all in. It's all in the groupthink and where the draft publications and the pundits tell fans they're supposed to like a player. Because the vast majority of fans don't know these guys from Adam, and so they'll pick up a draft. You know, there's a small percentage of hardcore draftniks that follow it throughout. And I'm not talking about them, but by and large, the most part, and oftentimes the loudest fans are the ones that are not the hardcore draftniks. They're the kind of casual fans that, you know, parachute in for the draft and expect they're told who to what to think about whom where they're drafted, and if the team follows the script, it was a steal. It was, you know, or if the team follows the script, good job. If the team gets a guy that later that was rated much higher, it was a steal. And if you draft a guy that wasn't expected to be there, it's an automatic reach and a fail. You know, and that's just the way it is.
And I'll take it a step further, too, Kirk. And those fans have probably never spent a nickel on buying Red Line or the Black Book from Hockey Prospect or, future considerations or anything like that. And just click on, NHL.com and look at their rankings and...
Or buy the THN draft preview, which is, you know... Great value for the money, man. That was the original Bible. And I used to have, like, just about every draft guide from Hockey News going back to the very first one Bob McKenzie did in 1983. And I actually gave them to an NHL scout friend of mine because they were just taking up a lot of space in my house. And I know he enjoys that stuff. And so I passed those on, But yeah, great, great bang for the buck. I'm not running those things down. I'm just saying, you know, like some people are so passionate about who the Bruins don't take, but their knowledge of that is superficial. They're essentially just being conditioned to think what someone's telling them to think, and there's not much research done. So, like, here's an example. I was not a fan of the Trent Frederick pick. You guys remember that?
Yeah, I think we all were.
Well, I was shocked, right? I was like, what? Now, I had personally scouted Trent Frederick. I was at the 2016 World Under-18 Championship in Grand Forks, North Dakota. I saw him play, and I did not – I saw him as a solid second, third-round type guy, just personally, saw the athleticism. But I saw a player that, to me, couldn't do much off the rush, couldn't really create. He was just kind of a go straight to the net with your stick on the ice and use your athleticism to deflect pucks in the net. But I didn't see any, you know, something that screamed, you know, first round NHL pick. I saw a project and a guy that was going to probably need a little time and had some intriguing physical upside, but wasn't the kind of skill guy that you take there. Now, what I didn't know is he had a broken hand. And so I think he scored 5 or 6 goals in that tournament with a broken hand. Now, that's darn impressive, right?
That's scary.
But context is everything. I know he had a hat trick against Latvia, and I saw that. And every goal he scored against Latvia was exactly how I described it. He just went to the net, stick on the ice. You know, Clayton Keller or someone, you know, they had some just grossly talented forwards on that team. Logan Brown, Kiefer Bellows, all those guys were on that U18 team, and the puck goes, you know, right in the net because he has a stick on the end. But he wasn't stick handling through guys and doing the things that, you know, get you excited, you know, when you're talking about high level hockey skills in a scoring forward. So I was critical of the pick, but as I did the research and as I talked to his coaches, and I had a top D1 coach who is now an NHL coach tell me, I wanted this guy so badly for my university, and when he turned me down for Wisconsin, I was crushed. Now all of a sudden I'm thinking, right? So my point is, you evolve your opinion. Like I was not a fan of the pick when it was made, and I was guilty of being critical of the Bruins without much context, but I evolved the opinion and I tried to be fair, right? And eventually I realized, hey, made a mistake. This guy's a player, and he proved it. He went to Wisconsin. and, you know, was one of the top scoring, true freshmen in the country. So I share the point, not the story, not to toot my own horn, but to simply point out that it seems like in many instances when we get on the internet or we have discussions about players and prospects, there is a large segment of people who don't want to evolve the opinion without having it be right in front of their face. So what I mean by that, as you guys know, is the Jake DeBrusque effect, right? Jake DeBrusque is right in front of their face, and he's doing things, and they see it, and they're like, oh, my gosh, Jake DeBrusque is the man. You know, what a nice pick. You know, that guy's a player. But that evolution in thought did not happen when he was playing his final junior season split between Swift Current and Red Deer, nor did it happen when he struggled to score in his first pro season, but had an unbelievable shot volume. And if you watched him, you realized, hey, the law of averages are going to catch up with this guy. You know, he's generating so many scoring chances and getting so many pucks on the net. He just has no puck luck. But it's not that he's not scoring and he's hardly touching the puck and shooting the puck. He's shooting a lot. So eventually, this is going to start going in, and it did. And then his second year of pro, he's an NHL guy, right? All of a sudden, now the position evolves. So my point to people out there is you have the information at your fingertips. You have the ability to go online, stream games, you know, engage with people that know a lot more than you do. Ask questions. You know, do it. Why do you want to take the low-hanging fruit and the lazy man's argument and just focus on the here and now and not at least give the team and the players the benefit of the doubt and go out there and see what you can find and see if you can evolve your opinion? So, again, I'm doing all the talking. I apologize, guys. Let's get the discussion in your corner a bit.
Well, I mean, it's tough to add anything after that speech, Kirk, but it's absolutely correct. It's like, you know, until the book is closed, it isn't finished. So, I mean, that's the only thing I can add. It's like, you know, let's wait and see on Zachary Sinishin. Let's wait and see on Jacob Zboril and see what happens. I mean, their careers are far from done. That's all I've got to add to that. Well, now, I will add this, and it's not the 2015 draft. And I'm sure if we talk about World Juniors, we're gonna bring this player up. One of you mentioned earlier that they have four undrafted players on the roster right now, right? Mm-hmm. Here's a kid that nobody seems to be talking about, and Reed and I get to see a lot of them, and hopefully in the World Juniors, most fans will get to watch him, is Kyle Kizer. This kid, from the minute the Bruins have signed him as an undrafted free agent to today, has improved leaps and bounds. Today, I would not be afraid to call him the best goaltender in the Ontario Hockey League. And if he gets a chance to take the net for Team USA at the World Juniors, and he plays like he's capable of playing, it's going to be hard for them to pull him out of that net. Agree, Reed?
Oh, absolutely. And you mentioned that we get to see him. And, you know, in my position with the Hamilton Bulldogs, sometimes I get to see far too much of Kyle Kizer, to be quite honest. The kid is just unbelievable. And when he gets on a roll, wow. With momentum and with confidence, Kyle Kizer is, as Dom said, as good as any goaltender in the OHL. And right now, you look at Mike DiPietro, who's essentially the guy that a lot of people believe is the number one goalie in the OHL, and maybe the number one goaltender with Carter Hart up in Philadelphia now, maybe the number one goaltender outside of the NHL. Well, Kyle Kizer's right there. You could have a great back and forth on any given night about whether DiPietro's the best or whether Kizer's the best, and that's really saying something for a kid that was an undrafted free agent signing.
Yeah, so it's not always just about drafting. Torrey Krug was never drafted. You know, it's finding these guys, these diamonds in the rough, if you want to use that phrase, and being able to attract them, you know, and sign them. And, you know, in a cap world, you've got to build through the draft. You've got to have those players on entry-level contracts. But it isn't the only way. It's nabbing these guys that are able to play and bringing them in as free agents as well.
Yeah, 100%. And Kyle Kizer is a Victory Honda, Detroit Victory Honda product, interestingly enough. That's where he played his minor hockey before going to the OHL, and he did play a little in the Bell Tire Bantam. So even though he's a Florida kid, he left Florida to go up and live in Michigan with a billet family, a host family, and play hockey at a high level in that elite midget AAA league that we get so many of our players out of. The Victory Honda is the Tier 1 elite league, AAA midget league, and that was the Super Showcase I was at here this past weekend in Phoenix. I know, Phoenix in December, tough duty. I know you guys really feeling badly for me. And I've been down there in Arizona in December. Well, someone's got to do it. Might as well be me. But, Kizer's is certainly intriguing, and you have to, like you said, give credit where it's due. Came in as an undrafted free agent camp invite and played his way into a contract. And now the Bruins are looking pretty darn smart for doing that, because
you've got to attract players like that too. It's not just about the draft. It's hitting on those guys that didn't get drafted, the Torrey Krutz, right?
As a 99, he would be eligible again to be picked in this draft. One more, and
that's correct.
With the numbers he's putting up in Oshawa, you'd have to draft him if you want him, And now he's free chicken, as we say.
It's similar to the Zach Sinishin pick, mm-hmm. or the draft. It's they see something there. They know it's going to take time. I don't get to see enough of Jeremy Swayman or Daniel Bladosh but I watch him when I can to say that Kyle Kizer is the top goaltending prospect for the Bruins. But if he's not, he's right up there with the two of them.
You know what the
right?
best part of it is, though? Birth years on all three of those players, 97, 98, 99. You don't have to go out and spend a first or second round pick on a goalie to have a pretty good, solid development. The numbers for Swayman are down a little bit this year compared to last year. But I talked to one of the Hockey East guys out there, is a former pro goalie. And I was asking him about Swayman, and he was like, his one word answer is like stud, killed us last year, killed us last year. So, you get your players where you get them. And, sure, there are some higher profile guys that Bruins have missed on, but again, we're having a pretty interesting conversation about a third round pick, a fourth round pick, and an undrafted free agent. And I think it's not a stretch to say one of those three is probably the future of this team in net.
Yeah, exactly. It's the only thing I think that would prevent Kyle Kizer from winning OHL Goaltender of the Year, being in the finals three for CHL Goaltender of the Year, and we're talking out of 120 goaltenders in the CHL, is. And leading in every statistical category there is only because Michael DiPietro was traded to the Ottawa 67s.
Yeah, and that team's got a defense that you could put me behind and probably win some hockey games. They're absolutely loaded on the back end. So I see your point there, Dom, but there have been some rumors around Kyle Kizer. I don't know if anything's going to come of them, but... And I know that they're not in a position to do it, but could you imagine Kyle Kizer in behind Evan Bouchard and Alec Regula and that defense in London?
Oh man. I don't see it happening, because I think Oshawa is going to load up and take a run at the championship. I really do.
Well, I hope they do, but rumors of the Memorial Cup bid seem to be creeping in once again. So now there was talk last week of, and Dom, you may have heard it, some people saying, well, are they going to sell in hopes of putting an attractive team to the bidding committee for the Memorial Cup? And I hate that. I absolutely hate that process. I think guys like Stadnica and Kaiser, you got to go. You got to go for it. Like what the Bulldogs did last year with Caden Fulcher in the back. You've got to, when you have a goaltender like that, go for it.
And Kaiser's the type of guy who can steal you, not just a game, but he can steal you a series. I really, really believe in this kid. Just, you know, I bet you when the OHL coaches poll comes out in, I believe it's February, Reed. That they'll vote Kyle Kaiser as the best puck handling goaltender in the league, and I believe he finished third last year in that voting. He's improved from last year. He's the best goaltender in shootouts and breakaways. He's got the best glove hand in the OHL right now, and his rebound control, I thought he was good last year, but this year is just, he kicks pucks out to guys at the blue line breaking the other way.
Yeah, like, no, guys, I don't say this, and I don't use this name lightly, guys, and I don't want people to go crazy when I say it, but the closest comparison in terms of a skill set that I have to Kyle Kaiser, to me, and this is from seeing him time after time live and calling his games, Martin Brodeur.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring it up because, you know, people think I'm being biased. But, you know, if they ever removed the trapezoid and he has the puck, like, he doesn't miss. It's tape to tape to the other blue line.
He could quarterback your power play with a goal stick.
Yeah, he's that good at handling the puck. I mean, I was watching a game. I had to record it. I couldn't be there, and I forget where I was. But I got home and watched it, and they were down 2 men. It was a 5-on-3. And this guy, Oshawa, was under pressure, heavy, heavy pressure. And three different times, three consecutive shots that they were under pressure, he punched the puck out of the zone with his blocker. Like, straight out, punched it out. I mean, he knows where to put pucks. If it's not a tape-to-tape pass, he knows where to put it, where his defenseman's going to get to it first.
Yep.
I just can't believe how far along he's come.
Well, let's use the segue then to go to World Junior, because that was really the last topic we were gonna address. It is Christmas time in Hollis, Queens, and in addition to mac and cheese and collard greens, we've got the annual Boxing Day World Junior tradition this year in Vancouver. Interesting. I think the same year that the World Junior was in Vancouver, they also had the draft, and we're having a return to that. It's back to 2006, I guess. But you guys correct me if I have that wrong, but I'm pretty sure that was the year Tuukka Rask took top goalie honors was in Vancouver at the World Juniors in January 2006, and then, you know, 5 months later, we were there watching him get traded to the Bruins. Watching the Bruins pick Phil Kessel, Milan Lucic, and Brad Marchand with their first three picks of that draft. So maybe we can recreate a little magic in 2019, you know, from Vancouver. But hey, World Juniors, guys, let's talk. You know, obviously the big, we just talked to Kyle Kaiser, OHL player, the other big time World Junior guy expected to play a major impact on that tournament from a Bruins perspective is Kaiser's teammate, Jack Stadnica. Go.
Wow. You know, I'm really looking forward to this tournament. I think it's going to come down to the U.S., Sweden, and Canada for the medals. My sleeper team is the Czechs. I think they could survive. Russia, I saw them at the CHL Russia Super Series, and usually they don't bring their best players to this tournament. But this year they and even last year they started to bring as close to their World Junior Championship roster as it's going to be, and they look good. But I don't think they're in the class of the four that I mentioned. As for Stanika, he did well in his exhibition games. I thought that they would use him more as a two-way checking role, but they got other guys that can play in a shutdown role. Shane Bowers, for one, who I believe was drafted by the Colorado Avalanche.
No, he was drafted by Senators, and he was traded as part of
the Duchesne. Right. Yeah, right. He was part of the
Duchesne trade.
Yeah.
Right.
So he's Avalanche prospect now.
Yeah. The kid and I say kid because he really is a kid for this tournament. After Hughes, the guy I really want to watch, and we're looking at the 2020 draft from Canada, is Alexis Lafreniere. This kid is, right now the number one prospect for the 2020 draft. So we saw what he did last year. This kid's going to be a beast. Morgan Frost, another slick playmaking centerman. I'm curious what role Stanika is going to play, whether he's going to play center, whether he's going to play the wing. In the exhibition, he played wings, netted a couple of goals, looked good on their top line. So I'm going to be curious to see what Hunter does. But Jack Stanika is absolutely deserving of being there. He's one of the Bruins prospects that gets talked about a lot. To me, it's a fun time of year. I love this tournament more than I love the NHL, to be honest with you. So we'll see.
Well, I mean, I could go on for hours, guys, for these holiday tournaments, because I could sit here and give you the breakdown of Karpat Ulun for the Spengler Cup. But for the World Juniors, as Dom was mentioning, for Team Canada, and I've got a vested interest in it this year because one of our very own from Hamilton, Mackenzie Entwistle, looks like he's going to be a fixture on that Team Canada roster. And Dom, to your point, I actually thought they may use Stanika as a checking center with Entwistle as his right winger. I mean, good luck trying to get offense going against that. But I think you're dead on with the teams that you've picked out. I looked, as always, and probably no surprise, guys, but I was all over the Swedish roster as soon as it came out and doing my background on that. And to me, the thing that stands out is all the players that are junior players on that Sweden roster, so playing in junior leagues, are only ones coming from North America. So Bockqvist out of London, Lefenius from Sarnia, and Hoog from the Kitchener Rangers. The rest of them are all, at least the majority of the time, playing in either the Swedish top league, Elitserien, or now the SHL, or the Allsvenskan league, or in the cases of Timothy Liljegren, Rasmus Sandin, and Erik Brännström, they're playing in the American Hockey League. And if those guys are healthy on that defensive end for the Swedish team, this is how it breaks down. Bockqvist, Jacob Ragnarsson, Adam Ginning from Linköping, Timothy Liljegren and Rasmus Sandin from the Marlies, Nicholas Lundqvist out of Luleå, Brännström from Chicago, and then Filip Westerlund from the legendary Frölunda program. That defense, to me, is
the best in the tournament.
Yeah, the best going. If they can limit the offense against them, because they don't have a top-end scoring offense like they've had in years past. There's no William or Alex Nylander. There's no Magnus Svensson Pajarvi to go way back. They don't have
not
any
gonna
of those
not going to get Elias
guys.
Pettersson this year, eh?
I don't think so.
Or I should say Ilyash Pettersson.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Don't get me started on that. But I don't think he's arriving. So yeah. They're going to have to rely on that defense to carry the load for them, but those are seven guys that can carry the load. So to me, the Swedes are going to be really dangerous, but they're going to have to play in tight scoring, tight checking games, whereas Canada and the U.S. may have the ability to blow it wide open.
Yeah, I hope you're not expecting me to break down the U.S. roster the way you broke the Swedes down there, Reed. Here's what I can tell you. I agree, USA is going to be... This is going to have a really strong club. They've got good balance and depth across the positions. One kid, you mentioned McKenzie Entwistle, Reed. My guy is Noah Cates, former Omaha Lancer and absolute ball player. Scored a memorable goal against Canada during the summer showcase there in August, where puck kind of came out and he kind of put it through his legs or took it through his legs and then shot it. The goalie was looking one way and he basically went complete reverse direction with the shot outside the crease. We saw him make magic from the mundane routinely in Omaha. It was really tough to lose him to Minnesota Duluth, but he's had an impact as a freshman. Kid's a ray of sunshine. I mean, you talk about someone who just loves the game and always has a smile on his face, and you couldn't ask for someone better in the room. And the thing about Noah Cates, fifth round pick of the Flyers in 2017, is that he's got really good natural size. He's skinny. He's got to fill out, but when he does, he may not be the most dynamic of skaters, but you're talking about an elite brain. Very creative, very instinctive, and he's got terrific hands. An underrated shot when he shoots it. I mean, he can really find the back of the net, but he's an elite playmaker, passer, and both sides of the stick. We would watch him just make some bullet sauces on the backhand that just, would get air and come right down and land right on the tape, of his wingers in stride. Moved to center. He was originally a winger. We moved him to center, and, man, he was just a beast there. Finished with 55 points on the season last year. And you know what? If we'd started him out at center, he probably would have been a 60, 70-point guy easily. So I'm excited. I think, it's not a done deal, but I would think USA would be mistaken not to bring Catesy with them to the World Juniors, and obviously they just have an embarrassment of riches. Jack Hughes, we could have a whole podcast dedicated to him. We'll just say that his time, I think, in the amateur spotlight is going to be short, because you're going to see him coming to an NHL team real soon near you.
So. My younger brother is a Colorado Avalanche fan, and I think he has voodoo dolls of every player on the Ottawa Senators this season. He is trying to will Jack Hughes to the Colorado Avalanche, and Chase is quite the hockey aficionado himself. So
hey, more power to him, but you know what? I think the Ottawa is good enough to where they're probably going to be that team that, they'll be a high pick, but I think I would not be surprised to see a team that's. I mean, you can't fully tank given the lottery system, but you certainly can sell off and improve your chances. And I could just see a similar decision to sell off and roll the dice and take your chances that the lottery balls are going to fall your way.
That's a tough one. I don't want to picture Colorado with McKinnon and Hughes down the middle.
He does.
Yeah, he does.
Just remember, boys. I mean, anything can happen. 7 years ago, I believe it was at this time, Toronto was sitting down in the basement with New Jersey, and we had visions of Gabriel Landeskog dancing in our heads.
Oh, then, don't remind me.
And then a funny thing happened on the way to the. To another second overall selection, this guy named James Reimer came along and ruined that party. So it could go either way. I mean, Ottawa could collapse or what have you. But I still don't really understand that. Really don't understand that decision to take themselves out of the running for a player like that. But hey, it's hockey, man. You got to do what you got to do.
Another guy that's going to be intriguing is Canada's Joel Veleno. who got exceptional status to play in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. And
Red Wings.
I don't want to say, I don't want to say he slipped to the Red Wings at number 30, but he was there for them, and he's absolutely tearing up the queue this year. So he's going to be interesting to watch to see at what level he is against, you know, the best players in the world in his age group. So he's a guy I'll definitely be watching.
Funny little story about Alexis Lafreniere. So I was coaching a team in the USHL O2 Combine last April, right before our Phase 1 Futures Draft. And so we were at, you know, they put together a bunch of teams of some of the top O2-born players. And there was a little group of guys that came down from Quebec. And there was a little guy named Frédéric Janvier. And guys, let me tell you, Reed, you would love Frédéric Janvier because he is a little ball of hate, fast, hard, physical little forward. He was only maybe 5'5", and that's in skates. But he hit like a freight train, and my team loved him. And, you know, it's very rare that you see it in a tournament like that because, you know, you bring the guys together and they're just together a short time. But somehow we just had great chemistry in the room. And this kid, Janvier, quickly just became the team favorite. And they weren't mocking him. They genuinely liked and respected him. And you can't always say that about some of the French Quebec players, you know, out there. You know, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of can be kind of hit or miss. But in Frederick's case, really well respected. And I thought to myself, okay, I'm not going to be able to draft this guy to the Omaha Lancers, but he is definitely going to be my little project. And I'll, you know, try to bring him to camp and bring him along and maybe get him on our roster at some point, because he is an absolute little rugged ball player with some of the most explosive feet you'll see anywhere. Well, thank you very much, Rimouski Oceanic. A couple months later, they draft him in the Q draft and offered him a chance to play with a guy named Alexis Lafreniere. So needless to say, there will be no Frédéric Janvier in the USHL forecast. But I just, when I think of the type of talent Lafreniere is and the chance that a player gets to play with him, it just reminds you that, you know, the game is so much bigger than all of us. And sometimes the best laid plans of mice and men do go awry. So I wish, you know, Frederick the best. And I am dying to pick his brain about just how just talented and what kind of a teammate and player Alexis Lafreniere is. Anybody that's seen Lafreniere, just he is a joy to watch the way he plays the game. And I think this is going to be a coming out party for him, and he is, for me, the prohibitive favorite, you know, in 2020 to do this, to have the same kind of impact and discussions that Hughes is having this year. So that's kind of my
very mature,
yeah, sorry, very wax
mature
wetter.
Kid.
Yeah,
guys, I think people would yell at us too if we didn't mention that the Czech team has two Bruins prospects: Daniel Bukac on defense. He's currently with the Niagara Ice Dogs. Big kid. The biggest question on him is mobility.
Yeah.
But if he can sort out the skating stride, he could have a future in the pros. And then Jakub Lauko, who is essentially a freight train on skates. That kid, essentially, the way I like to describe him is he leaves a jet trail after in the neutral zone behind him. So
playing for Rouyn-Noranda of the Quebec League, the Huskies there, Jeremy Lauzon's junior team.
Point-per-game player there.
Point-per-game player. Yeah.
And don't we have a Russian as well, too, Reed?
Pavel Shen from the MHL in the Russian League.
Yeah. Let's not forget him either. And
he's looking like a real steal, guys. He was excellent in that.
Sucks.
Yeah, he was excellent in that series with the CHL.
Yes, he was. So he could turn out to be a nice find. We're not talking superstars, but guys in their class that are better than most. Right.
But so he could be a top nine scoring forward. You know, nothing like, we're not talking first line 40 goal player. We're talking a kid that might at some point be able to give you 20 goals in your lineup on a deep offensive team if you can get him to come over from Russia. He is part of the UFA group in Russia. He belongs to that KHL team, so it might be tough to get him out, but I'm sure the Bruins are going to try.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I've heard it through some of the KHL or Russian hockey watchers that he's fully intent on coming over to North America. So we'll see. The Bruins haven't had the best of luck with Russians, but, you know, he could just be one of them.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a – again, I have always – been about, you know, you got to find the right players, and I don't care whether they're Russian, I don't care whether they're, you know, from Denmark, you know, I'd sign a heck of a ball player out of Chile if I thought he could, you know, help my team win, but the Bruins do not have a great track record with the Russians, so you know, aside from Sergei Samsonov, there's not much there, so I hope that at some point, that trend will be broken. Saw a stat, you know, David Krejci's the all-time, you know, Czech player for, you know, in Bruins history in terms of his impact and scoring. So I'm sure the players are out there to be had if the Bruins can just find a value somewhere. I really thought it was going to be Coco, but, you know, that dog won't hunt and that ship has sailed.
Now, wait a minute, Kirk. Are you telling me you're not a fan of Alexei Kasatonov or Yevgeny Ryabchikov? I mean, come on.
Hey, you know what? Kasatonov, if they had been able to get him about 10 years earlier, yeah, absolutely. You know, it was fast. I was watching that Red Army documentary. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that. If you haven't, you really should. It's on NHL Network from time to time. 2-hour you know, show that really focuses on Vyacheslav Fetisov and how, you know, it's the story of Russian hockey built around Fetisov, you know, and his career. But that whole thing with Fetisov and Kasatonov is so fascinating, and how they got Alexei on camera, you know, with the translator and asked him about it, and he refused to talk about it. You know, and what led to the bad blood between the two. But I'm segueing away from the cool talk. But for any fans out there, if you get a chance to see, or you've seen Red Army, you know what I'm talking about. You get a chance to watch it. It's definitely worth the 2 hours of your time. It's extremely well done. And if you have an interest in Russian hockey, and kind of maybe, you know, what makes some of these guys tick, it's absolutely worth watching. And as a child of the Cold War era and watching it end when I was a, you know, still in my late teens, couldn't get enough of stuff like that. But,
well, I come at it from a different way, Kirk, because as someone born in 88, I became a massive fan. I was just really getting into hockey as the defectors were becoming a bigger thing right at the end of the Cold War, or I guess not defectors at that point, but no, Russians coming over.
McGillney defected. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Coming over in greater numbers. So I got the interest in European hockey from almost that mysterious, where are these guys coming from and where are they playing, and seeing Red Army. Wow. So anybody of any age, whether you grew up in the Cold War era or you're like around my age and you just have an interest in European hockey overall, it tells a great story on how we got to where we are with the proliferation of the game around the world.
Yeah.
88, Reed? God, I'm old enough to be your father.
Yeah, technically I am too, but we're not going to go there. Technically, purely technical standpoint, I suppose that's true as well, but I'm going to cede the high ground to Dom over there. Yeah, you know.
I want to go back a minute to something Kirk said, that you've got to get players where you can, and get value players where you can. And the reason I'm touching on it is now, you know, there's a debate that's starting amongst Bruins fans about the CHL versus the NCAA. And the argument is, well, you know, David Krejci, Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, they're CHL players, and they're the ones that are doing the scoring for the team. And then they turn around, yeah, but Torrey Krug and Charlie McAvoy, you know, they come from the NCAA. And you know what, guys? Let's not cause a great debate and a war over this. You find the best players no matter where they come from, whether it be Russia, whether it be Sweden, whether it be the Czech Republic, the CHL, or the NCAA. And accept the fact that they've done well where they've gotten their players from. Let's not bring any unnecessary argument into this. You know, I just had to get that out there.
Oh, agreed. Totally. Totally agreed.
Awesome. Well, hey, guys, I think we've had it. We're coming up on an hour and 35 minutes. It's been a great podcast. I'm not going to break this up into two. We're just going to do one big magna opus, and people can, you know, people can listen to it as they can, when they can. May try to put it up on SoundCloud so people can download it. It means I'll have to get rid of the other stuff that's on there, because I don't have the big archive. I can only put a certain amount of files up on there. But, you know, look, I really appreciate it, you guys taking your time. It's always good to get the amigos together. And again, you know, we may have gotten a little preachy in this, but remember, it's all well-intentioned. We're passionate. We just want to raise the level of discourse. And, you know, don't mistake, you know, taking a position as being an intolerant of other opinions. It's just a situation where the wealth of knowledge that is out there, if you are willing to get in there and find it, find the information and evolve your position and be a fair-minded, you know, even-keeled analyst of, you know, the facts that are out there and allowing that something that doesn't look as good today might be every bit as good, if not better, tomorrow, we miss something. So, again, didn't mean to be preachy, but by the same token, you know, some of us, you know, kind of do this, and we have personal experiences, and we're just trying to share those insights. And instead of trying to be the loudest mouth on Twitter, or, you know, to get that short-term victory, you know, open the eyes, take a step back, you know, look at what's out there, and realize you got a pretty good, you've been blessed with a pretty good organization and team if you're a Bruins fan, and the best may be yet to come. Who knows? I'm an eternal optimist, and I know the three of us tend to be. So if you want negative, you know, negative Bruins talk and whatnot, you know, I mean, there are plenty of guys out there that would give it. But as for us amigos, I think, you know, we certainly have it right. So I'm going to sign off and let you guys close it out. But just wanted to wish you all happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Enjoy the World Junior Tournament. Wish you the best in wedded bliss there, Reed, and, you know, have a great one, and I guess we'll look forward to the next time that we can get the band together. So I'm done, and over to you guys.
Well, this is always fun, guys. I always enjoy when the three of us can just chat hockey, and one of the things, like Kirk just said, in terms of getting the full breadth of knowledge and willing to take in everything that's out there. When we do this, guys, I actually sit and take notes for a lot of it, because listening to you guys, if I've missed a player or there's something that comes up, I'm not aware of a certain guy, I want to be able to write that name down and go back and look that up and put that in the memory bank so that, you know, as we go forward, we do more of these. And just to generally know more and have as big a picture as possible, I want to be like a sponge when it comes to hockey knowledge. And this is always so much fun. I want to say the same as Kirk, Merry Christmas to both you guys and to everyone out there listening to us. It is so much fun to do this, especially at the holidays. I'm staring at my Christmas tree right now. And in the new year, I'll, you know, back with the Bulldogs. And we'll be doing the Hamilton Kilty Bees in the new year in the GOJHL. So there may be a fella in the USHL who I might be able to pass some notes to about some players up here.
Let me just tell you, we actually have a couple of Hamilton Kilty Bees on our watch list. And so when we get off of the when I hit stop on record, I definitely wouldn't mind following up with you at some point, Reed, on a couple of those guys.
It's always a pleasure, my friend.
Yeah, just to touch on Reed's comment there about writing things down and doing research, I'll just remind him about Jason Robertson. I had brought Reed over to the dark side a couple of years ago at the draft and convinced him this was a kid to watch. So, yeah, we all learned something from this. The other thing I want to say is fans will probably be disappointed because the three amigos this year did not talk NHL draft or the upcoming NHL draft, and I think it's something they look forward to. And I got nothing to add for that draft because Reed and I are facing what is probably going to be the worst OHL draft class in history. You know, we got in Reed's backyard there, Arthur Kaliev and Ryan Suzuki and Barry, who has really, really hit the wall this month. Boy, I can't believe how hard he's hit that wall. And maybe we might be looking at a Thomas Harley out of Mississauga on defense that is quickly driving up some draft rankings. So don't be disappointed that we didn't talk draft because Reed and I got nothing to add when it comes to the OHL. That said, you know, I want to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas and a Happy Holidays, and especially a safe one to everybody out there.
Awesome. Well, boys, we're used to signing off, and you know, but you know, we got to just come to grips with the fact that saying goodbye just means until the next time we get together and do a Three Amigos podcast. Couldn't ask for two better bros. It's fun. It's nice to get away from the grind of the reality of hockey and just kind of talk about our favorite team and just kind of talk about things in life. And you know, so to those who have stuck with us for all 1 hour 40 minutes and going on 1 hour 41 minutes of our discussion, thank you. And if you clicked off a long time ago, well, you know, you're not hearing this anyway. So for Dom and Reed, this is Kirk at the Scouting Post, the Three Amigos. Merry Christmas 2018. Hope your new year is filled with success, joy, and happiness. And we will catch you on the flip side. We are out of here.
It's Christmas time in Hollis, Queens. Mom's cooking chicken and collard greens. Rice and stuffing macaroni and cheese. And Santa put gifts under Christmas trees. Decorate the house with lights at night. Snow's on the ground, snow white so bright. In the fireplace is the Yule log. Beneath the mistletoe as we drink eggnog. The rhymes that you hear are the rhymes of carols. Like each and every year we bust Christmas carols. Christmas carols. Christmas carols.